Hey, everybody, and welcome to another exciting, adventurous episode of Indie Film Cafe. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I have two special guests who have never been on the show before. First off, we got Sarah Atkins here. How are you doing, Sarah?
Hello, doing good.
All right. And we also got Tris Marie here. How are you doing, Tris?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. We all watched separately the independent 2005 movie It Waits, and I am super excited to hear what you guys had to think about it and everything. And I mean, was that the first time you guys ever watched it?
For me, it was the first time.
Yeah,
for both of you. All right. I will probably be, just because there's three of us and everything, I will probably be, if I want to direct questions specifically to the people or whatever, it might be easier that way sometimes or whatever, so that we all get to speak, but, you know, that we don't, like, I guess, overlap all the time, you know?
Sounds good.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, before then, though, get ready and listen to some mood music. Welcome back, everybody. We are here to talk about It Waits. So you guys said that was the first time you guys watched it. I had seen it probably like one or two times before then, but it's been a while. I don't know if I'd ever made it to the ending because I get distracted very easily. It's really hard to kind of keep my attention going. But especially wanted to make sure I watched the whole thing, obviously, for this episode. let's talk a little bit about, like, what were your guys' expectations with this film? Like, just the title, It Waits, and probably, like, the picture that you guys saw. Did you guys think this would actually be scary or funny or entertaining at all? I guess I'll go Sarah first.
I definitely didn't think it was going to be funny by the description and everything. I knew it was going to be, like, a serious, like, creepy monster movie. Like, there's some sort of demonic creature in the woods that's going to cause some mayhem. You know, it's kind of, you know, one of your standard stories. Wasn't anything too, you know, I wouldn't say, like, too special or anything like that. But it was a good movie. I watched it all the way through. I got, you know, invested in it. I liked how it had a strong female actress through the entire thing, you know, and she overcame at the end. That image on the front of the monster was like, you know, you already kind of see an idea of what it looks like, but I like how in the movie they actually kind of tease the monster, and then at the end they just kind of, bam, show you full on this monster. You know, and that monster kind of gave me, I don't know why, but a mixture between Jeepers Creepers and Pumpkinhead feel.
It's probably what they were going for. I was kind of disappointed with the, you know, like when you see that picture on the poster, I always thought that the monster was more like Gollum, you know?
Yeah, it looks more mummy-like, or, you know, because it lived in a cave, I think that was their original look for it, was this cave-dwelling golem-type monster. So I was a little surprised when I actually saw it, because it's like, it was close, but I don't think it was quite a match to the image on the cover.
Yeah, exactly. What about you, Tris? What did you, what were your expectations when you were going into this?
So I thought, okay, this looks like this is kind of up my alley. I was kind of excited. As far as the poster goes, my opinion about that is, I kind of think that maybe they should have, and I like designed posters before, so like I guess that's in my head as well, like what would I have done with it, but I kind of think, and especially after watching it, that maybe they should have possibly made a poster with maybe the characters, and maybe like she said, it was like this big reveal of the monster. And I think, in fact, they should have maybe left it off the poster, or maybe had one of those things where the characters were on there and it's a smaller kind of, you're not sure, you know, just so it's more of a surprise in the film. That's, I don't know, that's kind of what I thought, but
I agree with that. I think this should have been like the park in the background with the trees and then the rangers with flashlights scared out of their mind, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, I think that would have been a lot more intriguing because I feel like the poster, I mean, it's kind of, it didn't end up being exactly what I thought it would be based just on that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and the poster makes it look smaller than it is, and apparently, like, this thing was supposed to be, like, 7 foot tall, and, you know, with wings and everything, which, it, I mean, in the poster, you don't see any of that. So mm-hmm. I think, I wonder if they made the, like, I feel like they made the poster either before the movie got made, or, like, after the movie that got made, they just didn't want to put the actual, like, complete monster on there so that you saw what it was, but... Also, I did like the aspect that you guys liked of it, of like where you don't really see it most of the time, because then there's kind of, there is that big reveal, right? Most of the time they do that because, I hate to say it, they do that a lot with horror films because they don't have, you know, a really good makeup or costumes and they don't want to keep showing something that looks terrible, right. But
it's really expensive to show that monster, so the few scenes that they can provide, you know, is probably a lot cheaper. Mm-hmm. So they look like it was a pretty expensive setup there because it wasn't done horribly. The monster actually looked pretty good. Like, I wasn't disappointed in the monster. I actually thought the monster looked decent. It just was a kind of a different monster than the was on the cover.
Exactly.
No, I agree. But I did like, there was a line in the movie, and I really cracked up because Serena Vincent's character, Danny, actually says the words, you know, I wonders if it's a Sasquatch, you know, or something or whatever. And I thought that was hilarious because the next movie that she did with Stephen Monroe is Sasquatch Mountain, which, you know, I just always thought, I actually thought Sasquatch Mountain was before It Waits, and it wasn't. So... it's really funny that they were able to go, oh, well, here's a Sasquatch movie for you to do next, you know?
So what else was intriguing to me that caught my attention was, the fact that I recognized somebody from Twilight in that film. And I was like, okay, you've got me now. Cause like, I'm a Twilight nerd. But, so the girl that plays Emily in Twilight was in this movie, and I thought that was very interesting. And then, so Twilight was in 2010, 5 years after It Waits. So I just, for me, that was just an interesting aspect of it.
Well, yeah, you never know when the person's going to, like, catapult into, mm-hmm. like, bigger projects, too. I don't know if the person puts It Waits down on her resume or not. You know, after you've done something like Twilight, you know, you're kind of like, all my other stuff is, you know, not as important, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so to go into the story, let me read what it says on IMDb as the synopsis, and then we'll kind of talk more about it itself, go more deeper. But It Waits is a suspenseful, horrifying tale of Native American legend come to life. You know, this was not written by a fan. This was written by somebody who worked on the movie when it says this stuff, because it was not horrifying or terrifying. But, all right, a creature trapped in the bowels of hell has been awoken and unleashed on the world. It prowls the wilderness, hunting a young, wild, willful ranger named Danny. Danielle is experiencing her own personal turmoil, having recently been responsible for the death of her best friend. Things go from bad to worse as Danielle realizes that she is not alone in the wilderness. There's a creature slowly stalking and hunting her. The creature claims the lives of the few people that may have been able to help Danielle, and all hope seems lost. She awaits as the creature comes for her and desperately struggles for her life. But will her struggle be enough to ensure her survival? That's a pretty in-depth, like, look into that film. Honestly, that sounds awesome. You know, when you read it, like, out loud, you think, oh, man, that sounds like it's going to be a really fun thrill ride. And don't know necessarily that's what we got, but, I mean... All in all, it had some enough suspense to keep me going, you know, and stuff. And I just sort of wanted to know where things were gonna go. So let's begin. Who was everybody's favorite character in the film? I guess let's start with you, Tris.
I want to say the monster. I almost wish we would have seen it more, to be honest. Because I like that sort of thing. For me, it was kind of it kind of dragged on a little bit without it. And I don't know. I would have liked to see more of that personally. But the acting was good. I thought the acting was good in the film. I could say a lot more. I know you're going to break it up in different parts, but as far as character goes, I liked the monster, which did a person actually play that?
Yes. What was his name? So they actually call it, what do they call him? And it, like, I think the monster.
Right.
The creature was played by Matt Jordan as Austin Jordan.
Yeah, I'm trying to look it up right now, too. Matt Jordan. Okay.
Okay. So Matt Jordan played the creature. Let me go down the list. Like, Serena Vincent played Danielle. Dominic Zambrogna played Justin, her boyfriend, I guess. Greg Keane was Rick Bailey, the character. We'll get into that character in a little bit. The character is sort of funny. Joseph Riverwind was played by Eric Schweig. That was the was he a Native American in it too, or something?
I think there were two Americans in it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and in fact, at first I thought he was, also in Twilight. I was like, I like scoured his IMDb, so I was like, he looks so familiar, but he was not in Twilight, but.
Everybody can be in Twilight in this movie. Sarah, who's your favorite character?
I didn't even think about the monster. The monster obviously is a character, but that didn't even dawn to me that that could be your favorite character. I would just say Danny, because she's the main focus. She's, the star of the show, and everybody else was such a bit character. Like, they didn't have severe roles to get attached to them. I mean, her boyfriend kind of did, but he didn't last very long.
Yeah.
His character, there wasn't a whole, like, they tried to give backstory on their relationship, but it was just kind of like, here's your coworker that's in love with you and makes things awkward. Oh, he's dead. So it's just kind of like, he didn't get too invested except for her. Like, you knew what had happened to her and her friend. You knew what was going on with her and her boyfriend. Like, it was just so focused on her. She's like the only character that I really was like zoned in on.
Well, here's the funny thing about that is, like, most horror movies, especially like, these kind of movies, they tend to have the love interest throughout the whole thing, like protecting them all the way up until the end. The fact that he died halfway through or whatever was pretty shocking to me. And
she basically had to take care of herself, because that's where the presence of the strong female role came in for her, though, is because the whole movie was from the first scene of battling mental demons to battling physical demons to just dealing with everything in between, romance things, like, through the entire thing. It really was a strong, like, I'm a strong female and I can do this on my own type of role. And it was kind of interesting too, how they some point brought up that the monster was a female, and it's like, they tried to make the monster a strong female character too, which was a little interesting. They didn't touch base a whole lot, but they did mention that they thought it was a mother and had mother instincts.
Yeah. I like that. So I will say who my favorite character is, and my favorite character is Hoppy. Throughout the whole bird. Movie, the bird, the parrot.
Oh, yeah.
He was my favorite character. I'm sorry, but I was like, they better not kill off Poppy.
Exactly what to say and when to say it.
Oh, exactly. And not only that, like, what I liked about it was he kind of, you know, like, I don't know. It was sort of like this kind of sweetness to the to having like this bird with her, you know, like surviving. And I was like a little worried that when she came into the house or back into the ranger station and saw all those dead bodies there, I thought Hoppy was going to be one of them. I was freaking out.
You were concerned and invested about the bird.
Yeah.
See, it was hard for me with the bird because I was just like, his vocabulary was like so much that I was just like, it was kind of a little bit unbelievable.
It's unrealistic.
Yeah.
Like, it was very unrealistic, especially when he found his way back home to her in the end. You're like, did you really know how to get back home to her? Like, but it broke a wall. It was a wall for her to be able to communicate and talk to a character without it actually being a person or a physical character. So they used it. They used it pretty well.
I kind of predicted that the bird would find its way home at the end, you know. That's sort of a cliche. Like, if you have a bird fly away,
any sort of pet or animal, like people love the animal, they want to see it go home.
They want to make sure it's alive.
That's another thing too, because I read a review that said this, and I was like, you know what, I agree with it actually so much. Because so I went to American Film Market in 2019 and I sat in on these panels where Lifetime and everything, they were talking about their films and stuff. And so I saw a review that said this and I was like, that, yes. And so that's another thing about the animal, the bird, so one of the reviews had mentioned, like, you know, the beginning's kind of like a Lifetime movie, and I'm like, yes. And you even have the pet, and that's one thing they kind of joked about with Lifetime movies. There's always, you know, a pet, and it, just the way it flowed in the beginning was like Lifetimey, and then it switched. So you know,
it's a Lifetimey vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was looking. It's actually really funny that you mentioned that, because guess what Stephen R. Monroe is doing right now?
What?
Directing Lifetime movies.
Really?
So, yeah. So, I mean, I think he's always sort of had that vibe, which is really funny, because if you think about it, a lot of indie directors have gone on to direct Lifetime movies. And even like The Asylum, who make horror films, they produce, they produce Lifetime movies as well. I mean, it's just a simple thing to do. It's just a simple story, you know, like thing. And, you know, so it's really funny that you said that, because I did look that up today, and I was like, what is Stephen R. Monroe up to these days? Because I used to really like his horror stuff. I think he did like the Spit on Your Grave remake and a bunch of other stuff. So he was well on his way to becoming like this big indie, like, director guru guy. And then he kind of, I guess, decided to start making, you know, cash, because I mean, that's instant money right there, is doing those Lifetime movies. They don't take much time, and they're always on the air, and you know, so there you go. to go back, and Hoppy was actually voiced by somebody, by the way, guys. I was disappointed in that when I found that out. You could tell.
I had a feeling.
I could not tell. And I, so when I saw in the credits, you know, voice of Hoppy, I was like, no.
No. Heartbreaking.
I knew it.
I didn't realize
that.
It did break my heart. I was like, I love Hoppy's voice. And I was like, I really hope that's coming out like parrot. but I don't, like, now I'm wondering what that parrot really sounds like, or if it even talks, you know?
It probably doesn't.
It doesn't talk. Like, I wonder if it would, like, interrupt the people while they're trying to do the thing.
That's what I'm saying. If it talked, it would interrupt during filming, and it would just be a big mess. I bet you it's a quiet bird.
Okay, that makes sense. Because then when they're shooting it, they can just, they don't have to worry about anything. They can just dub it. We, last month's movie that Paul McKenzie and I watched was a movie called Grizzly Rage. And in the movie, and Grizzly Rage, they actually had to dub the bear, because they don't you don't want a bear to actually really growl at you, you know, and totally makes sense. So like I can see this. Like I wonder if they do that for like pretty much all animals generally, unless like, because I mean I guess you can get a dog to speak, you know, if you can train them to do that. But still, like, I mean, that might be obnoxious to have the dog continually do that, even when you're not, you know, wanting it to. So, you know, so yeah. So let's go back to some more of the characters. I want to talk about that Rick character, Rick Bailey. It was his name, and he was, I guess, he was one of the Rangers who was at the station or whatever before that. She would call. And the whole time he just thinks she's just a big ass drunk, like no matter what.
He thinks that she's drinking her problems away and hallucinating everything.
I know. And it's like, I you know, like I hate to say it, but I was kind of like wishing for that guy to die. You know?
Yeah.
Like when he got there, I was like, I hope the monster gets him.
Nobody cared about that guy.
I know. You're so obnoxious to her. I'm like, dude, she's telling you there's somebody out there trying to kill her. You generally call 911, you know, even if it's wrong. And like, it's not like she's done this before where she called, you know, called them before and said, hey, there's somebody after me, you know? And so this is like the third or fourth time, you know, like,
right. I mean, it's better safe than sorry in those situations, but I know his excuse was, well, I won't tell anybody you're drinking on the job and we'll keep it between us. That was his motive for not getting help. But in this case, I mean, you probably should bring some sort of backup or some sort of help or a gun. Like I mean, maybe he had a gun, but not a big enough gun, obviously. But
right. Some. I agree. No, I totally agree. And he should have done something, or you know, like she said, bring the SWAT team, bring freaking police at least. You know, come check this out. Says
that the other ranger is dead.
Right.
That'd be a red flag to me. Of wait, you're saying he's dead? Let me speak to him. If I don't hear his voice, then I'm bringing somebody down there.
Exactly. Yeah. Like,
but then we wouldn't have a movie. I mean, that's most horror movies. Like, if they had called 911 from the beginning, we wouldn't have a movie.
That's true.
Not necessarily, because all those policemen would have died.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too.
Because, like, every character except for her died, you know, pretty much. I mean, or the Indian guy. You know, River Run or whatever his name is. Riverwind.
I do like how the story started out. Like I said, she had mental demons and then physical demon. I like how it kind of happened with a Jeep wreck and then ended with a Jeep wreck into the mountain.
I didn't even pick that up.
It came full circle with that Jeep.
That's interesting. Yeah, the great writing. We didn't talk about the writer real quick though. The writer of it is Richard Christian Matheson, who is if you guys are familiar, there is a very famous writer named Richard Matheson who wrote like Twilight Zone stuff and a bunch of other short stories and things, and his son was the writer of this movie. And so it's kind of interesting because it does, you're right, it has that sort of kind of like good feel to it, you know, of like knowing, you know, full circle where it's gonna go, you know what I mean? So I really enjoyed knowing that. But yeah, so that well, let's go back to that character. The character was useless in a way, but it was sort of funny because like you think, oh, so she's able to finally get help, you know, or whatever. She's able to call. She's able to, you know, like it. And then I looked at the clock and I was like, oh, they got like a half hour left. There's no way like it's going to end like this. So you knew that guy was going to die, but then she had to figure out on her own how to kill it, you know? And the one thing that kind of me annoyed in a way was that, the Indian guy told her that it wasn't like there was no there was no way to kill it. You could harm it, but there was no way to kill it, right?
Yeah, basically, so, she had to trap it.
She what?
She ended up trapping it, right?
She like trapped that,
that was the only thing she could do is trap it back in the cave where it spawned from.
Yeah. And she like blew up the car and everything too and stuff. So I mean, I don't know. And I thought it was awesome also that the rain was the thing that she, you know, because I was like, when I saw it started raining, I was like, run, you know, like, you know, you can escape.
Like water. So that would be like, okay, do I have a squirt gun? Is there anything around here?
Oh my God.
This is going to be like Signs where the aliens can't touch water. You know, it's like, what can I do? Let me just sit in the lake for a while until morning comes, you know, something.
Yeah.
Sit in the bathtub. Like, you can't touch me.
That would be sort of funny. I would have loved to see that.
Shower like, head on, be like, nope.
Like every time it comes close. Nope. Sorry. Nope. You're screwed there. but yeah, so then so the Native American character, that like she just runs into, I thought it was interesting though. Like she does just like people just kind of show up, you know, like she's going around places and like she sees people, like she sees those, they see those, two, hikers, you know, and then she sees that one guy, you know what I mean? Like, it's like people just kind of are around, you know? Like, it's interesting on that perspective. Like, it's a huge freaking woods, you know? I did not imagine that she'd run into, like, these people like that.
You ran into the lost hikers, and they just ended up being jerks, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Called that guy Texaco. Like,
yeah, it was something involving a gas station.
I think it was Texaco. Like, I was like, why? What? Like, and is that really, like, what kind of... Like, what kind of insult is that?
Yeah, let's degrade the park ranger who's trying to fucking save your life. He doesn't know what he's doing at all, you know?
I know. But there's some interesting stuff with that. But I did like the Native American character, because then we got the backstory that we needed. And what I liked about this movie was you guys compared it to, like, Lifetime and stuff, and it's got a little bit of that with some of the ways that they describe the accidents that happen and stuff, like the flashbacks. But then also with the backstory, he does so well that I just was surprised at, like, it explained it without being like too over, you know, like used or something, you know, like you've heard this story before. He did it well.
Yeah. And, I thought everything about the flashbacks was very well done. I thought that was a lot of my favorite portion of the film, actually, so much so that I was like, okay, I need to know who the cinematographer is. I need to know who edited that, because it was actually quite good, I thought.
Yeah, like the accident that happens, and even one of my favorite scenes in the movie was with Danny and Julie just talking to each other, having a fun time, getting when they're drinking and talking about their past stuff that's going on. I thought that was interesting in itself. Like, had this not even been a horror movie, you know, like, and that I think makes a good horror movie, honestly, when you can take elements out of it, out of the horror movie, you know, the horror element, and it still is an interesting, you know, film. You know, like, are these characters interesting enough for you to care about? You know what I mean?
When I first saw them talking in the beginning, for a minute I thought they were a couple. And then I realized that they were friends and the guy was hitting on her. But when I first started watching it, I don't know why, but I just, my first instinct was, oh, it's these girls are a couple, and one of them actually accidentally, you know, died and whatnot. But then I was like, oh, no, they were just best friends. They worked together. Like, it took me a minute to realize that.
I mean, there could have been more to the, you know, like, we don't know. I mean, I'm not going to say, like, that's not a possibility, because there was that kind of, she did really, really have, like, a love for her, you know, you could tell. But a lot of that, like, grief stuff, and then it drives her to drink some more. And then I like at the end how she dumps the alcohol out to make sure that she can survive this, you know, without... whatever, and that just, yeah, once again, just showed her as a strong, independent, you know, mm-hmm. character. She is very much like obviously modeled after people like, you know, Sarah Connor or, you know, all those other characters who are strong female characters. So I really, really enjoyed that. So to go back, I guess, was there any other characters that you guys wanted to mention? Because like we talked about a lot of them that have already there.
I mean, really the only other characters was the group that the first Indian guy led in into the cave that all disappeared at once. Like, I guess they were saying that they thought there was a mass murderer or something out there that killed them. And that's what she blamed it on at the end, instead of telling them there was a monster and looking crazy.
Right. It was the spree killer.
They weren't in for very long.
Yeah, she said it was a spree killer at the end because
probably the right move because you don't want them to think you're like totally nuts.
True. I mean, because like you tell them, oh yeah, there's a demon out there, you know, hunting 7-foot demon hunting people
right
with
before
wings.
She confesses to manslaughter.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I actually was surprised about that because they didn't really touch about like sort of what happened after, you know, she goes home, you know, so I'm wondering if they just kind of said, well, thank you for telling us, but you know what I mean? We're not going to do anything with, you know, right. with that. Cause like, I thought she was going to go to jail for that. Like, I mean,
I guess we don't know. I mean, they didn't really touch on it after that. They just kind of showed her there admitting guilt and then it just kind of ended. So who knows? I mean,
it ended with her going home and finding Hoppy. So,
oh, yeah, you're right. So she did go home. So, right?
Right, so she found Hoppy. So, like, my question is, did it end with her basically getting off scot-free, but at least she got that? Yeah, at least she got it off her chest, and right. now it's not going to be something that she has to worry about anymore. And then obviously, because I would have thought if she were going to go away, like if she was having to go to jail, she would have said something to Hoppy, like, I'm going to have to give you to somebody else or whatever.
Window, you know, something.
Like, yeah. Go somewhere else. Go fly somewhere else because you're not going to be able to.
I'll be free.
I understand guilt, but I would not have confessed to that. Like, I just wouldn't have. I mean, there's nothing you can do. It's not going to change anything. Like, I understand the guilt and letting it out, but to risk your life and putting yourself in jail for that long over an accident, which obviously you're already suffering from, like, I don't know. I wouldn't have told the police after that, after it's already been done and over with and brought it back up. I just would have just kind of kept that to myself. But that was something she had to overcome.
Yeah. What are your opinions on that, Tris? Because I'd like to hear yours too.
Gosh, I don't know. I guess I feel like she did. I don't think she could live with not confessing. And I think if she didn't, she would have had to go back to drinking and things like. And this was, I don't think at that point she would have cared what happened, because anything compared to it, what had happened
right.
is kind of pale in comparison. So I think just at that point, she was just like, screw it, you know, and I get, you know, and she lucked out because it's a movie. So happily ever after, she got to go home. So
She did. And I honestly really like, I sort of enjoy that because like, in real life, I don't know what would have necessarily happened because it was, 2 months ago or something that it happened. And I mean,
yeah, some time had passed.
They had kind of closed that case, you know, and stuff. And so I think it probably would have ended just the way it did, where they would have been like, well, thank you for telling us and getting that off your chest, but we're not going to prosecute you for that because, I mean, there's no real evidence after that, right. like that she was, because I mean, as far as they knew, they saw whatever. So, I mean, they'd have to really literally reopen a whole case and then arrest, you know what I mean? Like it would have been
too much work.
Yeah. But at least now she can kind of get that off her chest. However, I don't know. Cause she did say like, you know, everybody went thinking that the person was a, you know, the Julie was a drunk. So is she gonna, would she go and tell other people too? Like, I mean, I'm guessing I'm really going into like too much thought on this, because in real life, like, you know,
she wants to clear Julie's name that she's not a drunk driver, you know?
Right. So yeah, but she would she clear her name exactly? Would she have gone to like Julie's parents and said, I'm sorry, I'm the one who did this, you know, or something? Or would she have just left? You know what I mean? Like, things like that. I'm always wondering, because like, you know, like, what do you do in that situation? I've never, thankfully, knock on wood, and I don't ever hope to ever be in that situation. But, you know, if I were, would I want people to know that? And would I, you know, or would my friend, my best friend who unfortunately passed away, would they, you know, would they want me to go to jail for something when we were both the ones partying together, you know, and stuff. Right. So, I don't know.
A lot of unanswered questions. But...
unanswered questions. And I kind of like that, though, because it makes you think, you know, a little bit, which I was very surprised about a movie like this. This it definitely felt like a movie that had more than just a, you know, just a monster killing people, you know.
What? Sorry, not just did the monster kill people, though, but the monster set traps and, like, moved these bodies around and did some interesting things with these bodies. And I was trying to wrap my head around that, too. Why is the monster setting booby traps with the body parts, you know? Like, that was a little different.
That was cool. Also, digging up the dead people and stuff, and then like putting them inside the park range, like, he was sort of a prankster, you know, like, this was this is not a your normal like winged demon, you know. He was you know, like, even the boyfriend, I think at one point was like, wait a minute, why would he, like, why would the something like that jump on the top of the park ranger thing just to mess around with stuff, you know, or whatever. Like, nobody knows these
tactics involved. Like, this wasn't your normal like demon who just ripped heads off. Like, this demon messed with you mentally.
It definitely did. So I really enjoyed that. So I want to get your guys' opinion on the monster itself and the look of it, like, completely, like, the special effects and makeup. What did, Sarah, what did you think of that?
No, I thought it was actually pretty good. You know, I expected it to be a lot cheesier, and it actually was pretty good. Like, they had a decent budget. When he, they kept saying it was a female monster, I'm assuming, so I'm just gonna say she, but when she dug her claw into Danny's leg and pulled out like that flesh muscle, like, that was actually like not cheesy at all. Huh. It was actually pretty well put together. And then, like I said, I just got like this weird Pumpkinhead-esque like vibe out of the monster there. You know, it was just standing above her and just howling and the claws and everything. Like, I thought it was a pretty well put together monster. I wasn't disappointed in the monster. I do agree it was different than the cover. But for overall, like, I thought the special effects in it were actually pretty good.
Yeah,
I did too. Like, I completely agree. Which was another reason that it made me like dig a little deep. And I was like, I want to know who worked on it. But special effects, Darcy Davis, and he did Final Destination film.
Oh wow!
So
that
totally makes sense, right? Yeah, so I thought too, it was just really well done. I think for the most part, they had a really good team put together for the budget that they had. The only thing I will just say that I like didn't like at all was the music. Like, the score like bothered me, especially like their lovemaking scene. Like, it was a cheese fest, but and maybe, I don't know, maybe that was more Lifetime-y, but I don't know. I just didn't feel like the music fit with it, you know?
I don't even remember what the music was. So that's how little of an impact the music, I guess, had on me, is I can't even think about what it even sounded like anymore.
Yeah, me neither. Like, it didn't even have a score that I felt like I could even remember what it was, you know?
Really? Like, I guess I'm so picky. Like, I've got an ear for music anyway, so I don't know. I was just like, oh, it really bothered me.
Well, there you go. I mean, see, that's one of the things about, you know, when you look at the aspects of movies or whatever, you want to look into the whole thing, not just like, you know, bits and parts of it or whatever. You want to look at the whole scope of it, and music, especially in horror, is very essential to like conveying suspense or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there are movies like Friday the 13th, you know, Halloween, you know, movies like that, that have like these scores that people are like, oh my God, when that music comes on, people know it. And right. I felt like this movie had nothing. Like I think it had some, some like rock music too or something. Didn't do
I do feel like, see, it was so unremarkable to me, or it bothered me so much that I didn't even write down who did the music. and you know, but what I'll say is that while I watched it, I just thought, you know, this is well done. Actually, the acting is good. The story's well written. The cinematography was nice, beautiful. I liked it. So my real only issue really was the music for me. And so I was thinking while I was watching, I was like, you know, honestly, if they had a different score, and maybe it was a problem with they just didn't have something better in the budget, you know, you got to use what you got to use. But I do think if there was better music, it was, I mean, this was 2005, but it sounded like the music was like from the 90s, which can be fine, but like not like the lovemaking scene. I don't know. I just feel like it could have been better.
Was older, because I think judging by her cell phone and stuff, maybe they were trying to set this back farther than current time. Because she did have like a flip phone.
Yeah.
So maybe they were trying to keep the music to date to like their period, but and the music didn't work for me.
Well, you know what? It's funny. The composers, Corey Alan Jackson. Mm-hmm. Corey Alan Jackson is he's been doing a lot of stuff still, like to this day.
Yeah.
But you know, I think it was one of the like one of his first bigger ones. So mm-hmm. he probably got better, you know, later. Because
he was just too distracted to listen to the music. Like, I think I was just too into them running around and the monster and what she was doing to actually just focus on the music.
I totally get that. I know people say all the time, well, if you're distracted by little things, this like this and that, then you know, the film didn't do its job. I think it's only because like I've been trained like in front of the camera and like behind the camera, so like I'm, because I know all of those different aspects, I'm looking at all those different aspects that usually people probably wouldn't pay attention to, but like I naturally just do that, you know. Mm-hmm. Like even when I'm watching any film, I'm looking, which this one didn't really, their cast was pretty small, actually really small, but but bigger films, like I'm watching the extras, you know, and I'm just watching the little things in films just because I'm like studying it like it's homework or something.
I'm big on continuity. If there's continuity issue, like I notice it. I'm like, well, that pin was in your left hand, now it's in your right hand, and it's the same scene. Like that little stuff just, it gets to me.
Yeah.
I don't work on the sets. I'm not, you know, I don't do all the stuff that y'all do. I'm just a regular watcher of movies, and that's the first thing that distracts me is,
yeah,
well, they were in one position, another in another position, they cut and they cut it together and edit it right. I'm like, okay,
but that's great though, see, because so it's great to hear like both opinions about it, because I am like looking at it in that like technical aspect, but it's good to know as well, it's not like distracting for like just the average like viewer, you know. And that says a lot. I mean, I just can't help myself, like I'm gonna look at every little thing, but I know that too.
Yeah. I mean, like my profession is more like retail. So if I go to another person's store, you trust me, I'm going to be like, what kind of shelves do you have? Is this, you know, that's just how it is. Like you watch movies in the movie industry, you're going to look for those things. Like what type of scenes are they using in this? Okay. I know that one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like, so yeah. Like speaking of which, like, the movie, automatically drew me in. It was because of the shots, and I was so happy with the DP and the cinematography in this. I thought it was so well done. The cuts were so well done. They had really good editing. But like that beginning shot where it's like they're panning across the woods, you know, and you're seeing kind of through the trees and stuff. I just thought that was, it was beautiful. As a filmmaker, loved it, just saying.
I love the cinematography in this because it was edited very well. The shots were really good, and that's what kept me watching it. That's what was like, oh, this isn't just a cheesy horror movie with, you know, like, you know, ketchup squirts and shit. I'm like, this is actually like shot very well and done very well. Like, they had a decent budget and a decent cast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree.
I totally agree too. The camera guy has worked on a lot of junk too. So like, not junk like junk movies, but like just a lot of stuff. You know, from all the way back in, when was it? Good Lord. Since I'm looking down his thing, he's done since 1986. He's worked on a ton of work. So, I mean, and he's still working till in 2020. So
and he did the X-Files, right? He did the X-Files.
I think so. Like, the he DP? Worked on the X-Files. I'm not sure how many episodes or if he was their number one, you know, guy for it or not. I'm looking that up real quick. I don't think so. I think he worked on it. What do you do? Like, sometimes they're just like camera and yeah, like I think he just did like camera work for it or whatever. Like he was the Glacier unit in the X-Files movie, and then he was the director of photography from 1995 to 1996 for 24 episodes. So for that X-Files. So, I mean, I can see if you're going to ask somebody to DP your stuff, ask somebody who's, especially in the low budget horror stuff, you want somebody who's worked in TV because A, they know how to make things as pretty as possible and as quickly as possible. And that is very important in the world of, you know, cause you don't have a lot of time in an indie set to make a movie. So, or whatever. So you do it as much as you can.
And then as far as the editing, because I really thought the editing was really well done. Alan Cody, he did The Walking Dead as well. Oh. So, yeah.
TV people. So,
yeah.
So, yeah. So, you got some amazing people, like, working, talented people. And that can really, like, just the cinematography and sound. Sound was wonderful in this movie. I mean, I could, even though I had subtitles on, and I always do for Amazon anyway, I could still hear what everybody said. I didn't have to like rewind or, you know, or look or whatever. So I love that. I mean, it was very professionally well done all around. So I just enjoyed that. So the camera guy's name, by the way, was John Joffin, I guess.
John Joffin.
Joffin. I wanted to say Joflin, but it's Joffin. So but yeah, he was the cinematographer. The editing was great. The score obviously needed some help, but I mean, you know, I'd rather take a bad score, you know, or something like a noticeable score as opposed to like bad sound, you know, or something.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Things like that. And Stephen Monroe, the director, just I think he did a fantastic job just getting everything out of everybody, you know. Like I said, he worked with what's his name? He worked with Serena again, Serena Vincent, the star, on Sasquatch Mountain, like right after this. So like the year after they did that. So then, you know, he went on and did a bunch of other films and everything. Now Lifetime. So he's constantly busy working, and I love it. I love
seeing and, like, let's see, Kevin Ross, he also did editing on this. But so he also went on to do Stranger Things. So they had an interesting group of people together to do this.
Right.
That is a great group because, like, X-Files, Stranger Things, and Walking Dead are, like, huge movie or TV shows that have you know, in this genre of sci-fi and horror, you know, have kind of catapulted into like mainstream success. So
and the reason why I did so much digging too, especially because like I said, the flashback scenes were like my favorite. But it also reminded me a lot of, I don't know if you ever watched the show. I'm obviously obsessed with the vampires and stuff, but my favorite show was Vampire Diaries. Yep. And like a lot of these flashback scenes reminded me of Vampire Diaries. So I was like, I wonder if anybody from that show worked on it. Maybe they did. I couldn't find anything on that, but
well, interestingly, because like Vampire Diaries was after this movie, so I wonder if then that would mean that like they went on from there. But maybe because I mean, even though this was sort of an independent film, this wasn't like made by a huge studio or anything, it wasn't a indie film. Like, I don't think, it had a big enough budget to warrant, like, you know, people who worked on X-Files and, you know,
I was expecting a smaller budget and more of your like B horror movie. I actually was surprised that it actually had money behind it to make it look as good as it did. So I was glad about that, though. It wasn't too cheesy, you know. I actually was happy with it.
I mean, since this is your guys' first foray into Indie Film Cafe, you guys were lucky, you know, because most of the time we do find, like, you know, the trashiest of the trash, you know, kind of stuff.
There's nothing wrong with that either. It's like, Troma makes great movies. There's a lot of cool, cheesy horror movies out there. But in this particular movie, I was kind of happy with the way it ended up.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to find a film. We've been finding a lot of, you know, we've been doing a lot of stinkers and we've been doing a lot of, you know, other stuff. But like this one, I felt wasn't technically a stinker, you know, and even I always remembered it as not, you know, something. So I was very glad that it, because I always thought Grizzly Rage was better than it was. And that really disappointed all of us after you know, so like, it's so funny because this isn't, I think this was definitely better than that. But like, it's something that I could see on like the Sci-Fi Channel or, you know, like late at night, you know, if you're just perusing stuff. And I bet that's what sort of it was made for a little bit, you know, without being an actual like sci-fi production, you know, or whatever. But we are getting to that time. I guess we got like sort of an overall feel of what everybody's thinking. But so let me, for the audience at home who either may not be familiar with it or just to refresh people, we basically have a 1 to 10 rating system. And so this is our rating system is 1 is like really, really good, like one of the best, you know, kind of thing. And I don't even think we've ever had a 1. And I don't know if we ever will or not. But we had... the other one, on the other scale of it is, you know, is 10, which is like the worst, you know, worst of the worst. And we've had plenty of those on the show as well. So and then you can also do a 0.5 if you feel like it's sort of in the middle of whatever, like of like a 3 and a 4, you could say 3.5, whatever you guys think. But I always let my guests go first, period. So who wants to start? Raise their hand. All right, I'll go with Tris first.
I've never done this before, so I don't want to be first.
Oh, great. Well, I'm probably going to sound harsh because I said a lot of great things about it, and there's a lot of things that I feel like they did a lot right here, and I've definitely seen a lot worse movies, but holding my attention was hard in this film. And also and this might just be personal taste, like I it wasn't scary enough for me. It was more like a drama kind of, you know. And I'm not super into that personally, so and that's nothing against the film. It's just not my thing. So I would, because of that, but again, like I said, I love the team that they had together. But I'm saying all that to say 5.
Okay. That's actually, honestly, the way you were saying, oh, I'm going to say it's harsh.
Right.
I was thinking it was going to be way worse than that, honestly. So no, 5 is actually sort of
so much worse. I've seen so much worse where I won't even get 5 minutes in and I have to turn it off. Like that wasn't the case here, you know, so.
Definitely. What about you, Sarah?
Okay. Well, now I don't feel so bad because I actually have basically like the same review. Like, I agree. It wasn't really scary. It was more of a drama, which is fine. But yeah, for somebody who watches horror movies all the time, like it wasn't scary. It wasn't creepy to me because I guess I'm desensitized to all of that. So maybe to somebody else it would have been, but for me, it was more of a drama. But I thought, like I said, the cinematography was great. The acting wasn't horrible. It was actually decent. The special effects were good. I watched it all the way through. It wasn't a movie I put on for 5 minutes and was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. Like, I actually thought it was a good movie. I would recommend it to people. I'm not regretting that I watched it. And I was actually going to say a 5 as well. So, because it's like, I don't hate it, but I don't love it. It's like,
right.
It's not anything special to write home about. It's kind of cookie cutter horror movie of, you know, damsel in distress has to defeat the monster. Monster's gone. Okay. So it's like, it's pretty standard in the sense of like the actual script, but it was really well put together and I did enjoy it. So I'm going to go with a 5 because like I said, it's not horrible, but it's also not your blockbuster of the year, you know?
Okay. Well, that's interesting. You guys said that. So when I was judging it based on everything, I mean, yeah. See, my original thought was 4, you know, and a 4 because it wasn't too terrible, but I thought that there, but it wasn't, you know, the greatest thing, but it did hold my attention enough throughout. And there might have been points where I was kind of like, especially when she was alone, you know, and whatever, I was like, okay, can we get to like some of the action and stuff, speed this up a little bit. Because I feel like, honestly, I felt like the death of the boyfriend happened way too soon, you know, like that happened 45 minutes in. And I'm like, that should have been something that like happened toward the end of the movie, in my opinion. But I see why they did that, is to make it so it's all about her, you know, after that. But with all that being said, I'm actually going to change my thing to a 5 because my thought, my thought originally had been also like, this would be funny if this was a 5, 5, and 5, because, you know, because that would definitely kind of prove it to be sort of mediocre, you know, kind of movie where it's not, you know, it's not the greatest, but it's not the worst, you know, it's kind of in the middle of everything. And I kind of do feel like that's what this movie was. This movie was sort of like in the middle. So I would definitely go with a 5. So, but you know, if somebody like Paul, my co-host, that's generally sometimes on the show with me, he would probably rate it much, much higher. As far as like, because he does not like mediocre at all. And so he wouldn't find 5 to be mediocre. You would find like 7 to be like, because he would hate that, I believe. I'd love to hear what he has to say, because he generally like watches the movies and then puts up, you know, the stuff about what we said in the Indie Film Cafe. So I'd love to see what Paul has to say about this, because, you know, it is sort of like a mediocre film when it comes to things. But with that being said, it was still really well done, you know, really well put together. Just it wasn't, you know, it didn't live up to par. Like, I can see why it didn't get like It Waits 2, you know.
Well, I mean, it can't die. Eventually it's gonna come back out of that mountain,
right?
But honestly, I could totally have seen like a cinematography award and stuff like that,
right? So, like, yeah, cinematography, editing award. Honestly, even directing award, because, like, the direction of it was really well done. The actors did a great job. You know, everything was so well done. So, like, I mean, all in all, it was pretty decent movie, you know, like, period. But it's just sort of, like, it just didn't have that thing that makes it stand out as this, like, fantastic horror film, like indie horror film.
I would recommend it, but I'm glad I didn't pay to see it.
Right.
Yeah. And I think even maybe, like I was saying about the poster, I think they wanted it to be a monster film, and maybe there was more of that in it and it had to be cut out, you know how it is. So, but I think even if even if they had like maybe presented it more as like a horror drama kind of thing, and then like, you know, change the poster to reflect that, I think even we would be more welcoming to it, but because we were expecting, our expectation was horror and we didn't get it, I think that's part of it, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Definitely. I agree totally, 100%. So I think like this definitely could have been so much better with a lot of the, you know, with the horror aspects of it. But, you know, like all in all, there was some great special effects. There was some great, the makeup job for the demon looked pretty awesome. I'm glad they didn't go with like a CGI demon.
Yeah.
Or something. I always hate that. Like when you can do a suit or something.
If you can go practical effects, go with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
I can see if it's like there really isn't enough money in the budget, and so having a CGI character is much better. Or if like you really needed to show the flying in the air more, you know, right, or something, maybe you create that, but you can't do that on a really low budget. It's just going to look horrible. So yeah. I'm glad on a low budget that they went with a person in a suit, you know, and it was scary. The only problem I'll say is it said it was a female and it really did not look like much of a
female. It didn't.
If they had made it more look like a female demon, I think that would have been more fun. If they had like a girl in the costume and they made it look more like that.
I feel like they just didn't know what they were doing with the demon, because it's like first you have two different looks from the cover to the actual demon, and then you have the whole story of it being a female but not looking like a female, and it just seemed like they should have worked a little bit more on getting the demon together.
Exactly. Oh well, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda. They didn't. So, all right. Well, thank you, ladies, so much for coming on. First of all, Tris, tell us what have you been up to lately?
I've been working hard on TikTok, and that kind of blew up for me a few days ago, and kind of trending right now on Fox News and MSN and Yahoo and some tabloids even. So that's crazy.
What's your TikTok name?
It's @TheRealTrisMarie.
Nice.
Yes. Well,
there you go, everybody. Go check her out on there. Make it trend some more.
Yes, thank you.
definitely. So that's great. Well, awesome. Good luck on that for sure, because TikTok is a rabbit hole I just don't want to go down myself personally. Like, there's just too much, you know. I like to watch other people's TikToks, though, definitely.
Yeah.
But I'll definitely check out yours and subscribe. Because Indie Film Cafe does have a TikTok. We never talk about it because just never use it. So there's like, no, but Indie Film Cafe has a TikTok, which, you know, okay. You know, if anybody wants to subscribe to that too. Sarah, what have you been up to?
Well, I haven't really dabbled in TikTok or anything. Hopefully I want to get some sort of YouTube channel kind of going, for occult clothing and stuff like that, because I resell it, which I'm still doing my horror movie action figure, occult clothing resale shop, the Devil's Toy Box, which Devil's Toy Box DFW, you can find it on Instagram, Facebook, eBay. But I'm still doing my, my screen name, Virginia Church, trying to do the inspiring actor model thing. So you can check out a Facebook page or Instagram of the official Virginia Church and check out just, you know, me posting selfies all day, trying to get my face out there. So hopefully I could be an extra on some film or, you know, something, you know.
All right. Definitely.
Well, get myself out there.
I know the next project, like you and I are working on Supernatural Assassins together. So like that'll be your acting debut, I think. So
yeah,
that'd be awesome.
I know. Looking forward to it.
And Tris, I got to work with you sometime. Like, definitely. Like,
Yeah, for sure.
I see you constantly working and doing films and stuff. So I really admire that. Like, all the stuff that you're doing now that you're doing TikTok. I mean, honestly, that's the way like a lot of people are getting jobs in acting is through TikTok now. It's weird. Like, if you have enough subscribers and stuff, people will cast you in your movies. It doesn't even matter if you have talent as an actor, which kind of drives me.
You're gonna have to look into TikTok.
Yeah.
Well, casting directors and producers are on there, and the Daily Mail, that's how they found me, and I did the interview with them initially. They found me on TikTok, and so it's mad crazy. And then I've had producers contact me that have seen my TikToks, and you know, something that I kind of started out doing just as a creative outlet because of, you know, everything going on for 2020 has turned into this crazy thing. I never would have thought it went so viral. Like I've got stories on me all over the world. Australia has stories, the UK, Canada. I'm like everywhere right now. And it's like, it's because of TikTok. That's crazy. Like, that's insane.
That's incredibly insane. Like, I don't get it myself personally, but I love that. Like, I love anything that does help, you know, people who are struggling to try to get themselves out there. I mean, I have friends who, my friend Johnny is really big on TikTok. Like I think he's Johnny D Stone on there or something or whatever, but he does, his Darkstone Entertainment stuff on TikTok. And I guess, I don't know. I know TikTok was going to go away for a little while or something, or like they're having problems with stuff, and who knows. I don't want to get into the political aspects of anything, but it, you know, I'm hoping it stays around and people are still discovering things with it and stuff, because yeah, that's awesome. You know?
I think it will. And honestly, all of the back and forth about them taking it away and stuff, honestly, it's good publicity for TikTok, but it's not going anywhere. It's got so many employees that are American. Like it's the whole thing is kind of really silly in my opinion, but I'm very pro TikTok, so
right.
Yeah.
Oh man, yeah, I just remember hearing like how people are freaked out and stuff that it might go away, but I doubt it will. Like you said, I think it'll continue to thrive. And if somebody takes it over, like Fox or one of those companies takes it over, like they did with Tubi, you know, mm-hmm. like I wouldn't be surprised if if Disney took TikTok over. Oh boy.
Over, so.
Yeah. I don't know how that would work, but you know, somebody took it over, like I wouldn't be surprised, because you know, it sort of needs like this, you know, help to boost it to mainstream, you know, thing even more. But thank you ladies so much. It was so much fun. If you guys stick around after the show, I'm gonna just talk to you guys real quick and sure. Let you know a little bit more about it. Yeah, you're welcome. Thank
it
you
was
both.
A blast. Thank you.
Yes. This will be out next week. So I guess on Monday when it is out, you guys all will hear it. So thank you guys so much, and hope you guys enjoyed the show. Have a good night. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.